Temna zvezda. Podaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.
Écoute les orgues, elle joue pour toi. Il est terrible. Terre-là. J'espère que tu aimes, c'est assez beau, non? C'est le requiem pour un con. Ouais, je l'ai composé spécialement pour toi, à ta mémoire de scélérat. C'est un joli thème, tu ne trouves pas, non? Semblable à toi-même. Voici les orgues qui remettent ça.
Drage poslušalke in poslušalci, prav lepo pozdravljeni v novi temni zvezdi, v kateri bomo tokrat našo pozornost namenili le enemu filmskemu naslovu, to je dokumentarnemu filmu Najboljša sovražnika, ki smo si ga lahko ogledali na nedavno končanem festivalu dokumentarnega filma. O njem je na naših radijskih valovih v okviru dnevnega termina pisala že Petra Metrc, ker pa smo v dnevnih terminih s časom omejeni, smo se odločili, da si bomo tokrat za pričujoči film vzeli še nekoliko več radijskega prostora.
Écoute les orgues, elle joue pour toi. Il est terrible. Là. J'espère que tu aimes, c'est assez beau, non? C'est le requiem pour un con. Ouais, je l'ai composé spécialement pour toi, à ta mémoire de scélérat.
Stališča formalne analize dokumentarec Najboljša sovražnika ne ponuja nič novega, sploh glede na to, da premočrtno sledi ustaljenim reprezentacijskim strategijam interaktivnega oziroma razlagalnega pristopa, ukvirjena sta sicer res bogatim arhivskim gradivom, ki ga v koherentno celoto tkejo princip govorečih glav, linearna montaža in pa, in to je treba poudariti, branje izvirnih avtorskih tekstov v ofu Najboljših sovražnikov, to je Gora Vidala in Williama Buckleya strani Kelsija Grammarja in Johna Ligdova. Po drugi strani pa odločitev za branje avtorskih besedil, pod katera sta se podpisala Vidal in Buckley že pred njunimi znamenitimi televizijskimi nastopi, prepoznavni imeni takratnega nepreveč mirnega časa, v strukturo dokumentarca vnaša nekakšen nemir, motnjo, ki se uteleša v jasnini pristnosti aktualnega. Kot da bi režiserja dokumentarca Robert Gordon in Morgan Neville želela jasno sporočiti. Ne, ne gre nama za še eno zgodovinsko zgodbo. Še več, niso redki komentarji, da gre za enega bolj tankočutnih filmov leta 2015, kar pa je precej presenetljivo, sploh glede na konvencionalnost uporabljenih izbranih reprezentacijskih strategij. Odkot torej ta nenavadna emocija, ki sem jo konec koncev začutila med ogledom tudi sama. Dokumentarec binarno relacijo med glavnima protagonistoma vzame smrtno resno, tako kot jo je televizijska mreža ABC, takrat precej nepomembna, tako rekoč B televizijska platforma, pozabljena od velikih igralcev televizijske krajine, potisnjena v životarjenje svojo B televizijsko produkcijo in poceni B predvajanimi filmi. Naslov dokumentarnega filma Najboljša sovražnika tako ni zgolj golo naključje, je diskurzivna leitmotivika, ki je obljubljala soočenje dveh svetov in to tistih dveh svetov, ki sta se v letu 1968 tako silovito razpočila. Kliki in parole na ulicah, na okupiranih kampusih, bojih za državljanske pravice, goreč Detroit kot labodji spev fordističnega cikla. Takrat se je zares delo, da se bo zgodovina razpočila. Politika z realnim realnosti stke prav posebno strast na življenje in smrt. A tokrat revolucijo spremlja televizija, ki svojo prvo zlato dobo doživlja v 50-ih, a tudi v 60-ih. Bakli in Vidal sta bila del tega, tako družbeno-političnega vrenja kot televizijske kulture. In tega sta se tudi zavedala, no, vsaj do neke mere. Jasne so jima bile afektirane investicije ideoloških bojev tistega časa. Prepoznavala pa sta tudi osrednje mesto, ki ga je imela televizija v družbi 20. stoletja. Vedela sta, da pri televiziji vsekakor ne gre le za oddajanje programa, temveč za medij, ki nastopa kot širša kulturna forma. K vse večji pomembnosti televizije je sicer prispevalo tudi nekaj, kar je Raymond Williams opredelil kot televizijski tok. Televizijski tok televiziji kot mediju omogoči, bolj kot s filmom, ki funkcionira kot nekakšen prostorski eskapizem eroticizma podobe, da z vsakdanom splete prav posebne, tako rekoč intimne odnose, katerih edinstvena specifičnost je, da se reproducirajo skozi tisto, čemu rečemo oddajanje v živo. No, tudi soočenja Vidala in Bakleja so se odvijala v živo, v formatu, katerega pomembno sicer prepozna že Andre Bazin. Na štiri oči sta se tako Vidal in Bakli srečevala v montažnih studijih osiromašene mreže ABC, ki ni imela dovolj sredstev, da bi v celoti pokrivala republikansko oziroma demokratsko konvencijo 1968, kot je bilo sicer v tistih časih v navadi. Toda zdi se, da se osrednja protagonista do devete debate, ki je komentirala demokratsko konvencijo v Chicagu, na kateri so se odvile in razkrile vse zagate reprezentacijske politike, nista zares zavedala, kaj v resnici sama proizvajata. Toda sladka ignoranca se je končala prav s tem srečanjem. Deveta debata se je v zgodovino namreč zapisala kot debata, ki je dokončno spremenila medijsko krajino, jo skozi tisto slabo ločljivo televizijsko podobo spremenila v spektakel politike. Če sta se Vidal in Bakli prej slepila, se svetila v blišču komentiranja kot veščine, si krepila lasten bel narcizem in si žugala, se je z deveto debato igra končala. Zgodil se je res. Zareza in trenutek, v katerem se rodi spektakel političnega, ki začne vulgarizirati politično izjavljanje samo. Ostalo je zgodovina, ali kako se že reče. A kaj je pravzaprav zgodovina? Zgodovina je čudna reč, če tudi se zdi, da ima privilegiran odnos s preteklostjo, nenehno ejakulira v sedanjost, njena semena pa znajo skliti tudi v prihodnosti. Ker ima tako nenavaden odnos s časom in prostorom, ima različne strategije preživetja. Bodi si se pretvori v ednino, zgodbo ene same zgodovine, bodi si se naslavlja kot potalna sila, kot gibanje, ki se kot plas vali s predhodno težo, bodi si preprosto mora, ravno zaradi neštetega, pristati na heterogenost različnih zavojev in ovojev, ki pa so vse prej kot vzročno posledični. Pojavnost vzročno posledičnega je namreč zgolj navidezna, umetelna igra konstruirane retrospekcije, s pomočjo katere zgodovina zakriva svojo radikalno nestabilnost, ki bruha prav iz njenega nenavadnega umeščanja v čas in prostor. Tisto, kar je bilo, je morda res minilo, toda otegljaj fizične navzočnosti v zgodovini ne pomeni prav veliko. Še naprej se vrtinči kot tisti odpadli jesenski mini lističi, ki smo jih kot otroci frcali v zrak, zato da smo opazovali njihove rotacije, ki so spominjale na premikanje helikopterjev. A vendarle gre za drugo vrsto rotacije, saj je vse prej kot nežno. Med gibanjem zarezuje v zrak, vsak premik pa je hromeč. Sile preteklega namreč tleskajo na vzočnost, ki jo skušajo pogniti sebi v prid in tako ustvariti nove temporalnosti. To rotiranje, torej ni rotiranje jesenskih lističev, ki se nalahno usujajo po tleh, je težina, ki določa, kako se bodo vrtinci vrtinčili, določili o zdaju in o tem, kako se ta zdaj naseljuje v imaginarne svetove in skupaj z njimi žigosa sedanjost. Nahrihtanost poselitve zdaja v sedanjosti se potrjuje v neredki nezmožnosti, da se elementi zdaja postavijo zmožnost razumevanja zgodovinske mizanscene. Kaj osvetljuje kaj in kje je kaj pozicionirano, kakšni so horizonti tega razumevanja in kakšne njegove posledice. Potem takam je ta zdaj potrebno izluščiti, ga vlupiti plasti na videzne vzročno posledičnosti. Leto 68, leto, v katerem je bilo že toliko napisanega in povedanega, zgodovina se zdi, da se je prav s to trditvijo v veliki količini spisanega sprijaznila. To je to. Več se ne da povedati, pa je temu res tako, mar ni ravno poanta strukturne nestabilnosti zgodovine ta, da se iz povedanega lahko vedno izvleče še tisto, kar čaka, da se pove. Leto 68 kot zares, toda kaj pravzaprav je zares kot res? Zares obstoječ simbolni red, ki prekucne materialna pravila, ki se jih jemlje po principu tako pač je. Vendar, kaj odloča o tem, da je nekaj zares prepoznano kot res? Leto 68 kot erupcija političnega, ki se ga razume kot delati iz nemogočega mogoče. Najprej kot pok, potem pa kot tišina in seveda Jerry Springer. Izdolbeno luknjo namreč kaj hitro prekrijajo od bliski politike, ki se reificirana projdaja podaja kot čudno zavezništvo med tako imenovano tretjo potjo, estetiziranimi življenjskimi slogi, identitetnim zagovorništvom in afazijo do lastne epistemološke in ekonomske zgodovine. Leto 68 kot označevalec erupcije realnega politike, določeni načini govora pa navkljub pretečenemu času še vedno neznansko podobnim današnjim časom. Leto 68 je že res bilo, a bila je tudi konzervativna ofenziva podkrepljena s pomočjo reifikacije kulture in življenjskih stilov. Prav ta reifikacija spojena s spektakularizacijo politike, ki sta jo očitno urezala prav Vidali in Bakli, pa je prav gotovo ena od ključnih komponent, s pomočjo katere se uspe zakriti oblastna razmerja mednarodne delitve dela, simptom logike presežne vrednosti, na to mesto pa postaviti individualnega subjekta. Generiranje teh procesov zunanje pozicije spremljamo v najboljših sovražnikih. Ne le, da sta Vidal in Bakli prispevala k afektiranemu spektaklu politike, morda celo politične filozofije, stava na tako imenovani kulturni boj je nedvomno pomagala k formaciji binarne strukture všeč mi je. Struktura, ki je nenazadnje postala modus operandi tako imenovane družbe nadzora, najprej na način prevlade podobe, postmodernistične podobe, ki stopi na mesto diskurza in drugič kot ekonomija všečkov. Po deveti debati, v kateri Vidal Baklea pripravi, da izreče ti znamenit stavek, žalitev, ki je televizijska javnost in širši diskurz znotraj hegemonskega audiovizualnega režima še ni slišala, se zdi, da je Vidal kot označevalec ameriškega liberalnega Baklea razkrinkal. A pota zgodovine imajo čuden smisel za naključnost. Morda je Vidal res razkrinkal, kaj se pravzaprav skriva za bleščečim Baklejevim nasmehom, toda to je bilo tudi to. Televizijski spektakel, tisto, kar sta sama proizvedla, je požrl tudi to gesto političnega, s tem pa je tibiliral specifičen diskurs političnega, ki postane poseben žanr, žanr kot orodje apropriacije, tako kot znotraj filmske industrije, pri čemer pa težava ni toliko Springerjevstvo, ki iz tega izide, temveč prav spremenjena relacija med podobo in diskurzom ter politiko in politično filozofijo kot znakom. Tudi mi je težko to izreči, toda menim, da se je v tistem trenutku Bakli morda celo bolj kot Vidal zavedal, kaj se je pravzaprav zgodilo. Vznik spektakularizacije načinov govora o stvarih, ki režejo naša življenja, odločajo o tem, kako bomo živeli in preživeli. Govor, ki odloča o življenjih, z nekropolitiko pa tudi o smrtih, je v okviru novega audiovizualnega režima dokončno postal le znak, s katerim se trguje tako, da se ga zapakira v šečne paketke. Ne nazadnje, ni naključje, da gospod Regan, Baklijev tesen prijatelj, sicer pa slab B-filmski igralec, postane nekakšen simbol neoliberalne restauracije v 80-ih. Kaj je vendar boljšega za spektakl kot slaba podoba, ki je zgolj iluzija realnega realnosti. O zarezah in prelomih je res da težko in celo nehvaležno govoriti. Toda, mar ni prav postavitev ničte točke tisto, kar začenja poganjati, omogočiti vstop v zgodovino? Vidal in Buckley sta po letu 68 postala tako rekoč nekakšna spektra, gibajoča se snopa neke politične strukture, katere posledice se čutijo tudi danes, prav zdaj, prav ta trenutek. Deveta debata iz leta 68 je televizijski dogodek, ki je rodil nov način govora o politiki, diskurs, ki se je zažaril po ure vsakdana, ter se spričo novih informacijskih tehnologij še ojačal. Toda, ta zdaj je vedno le zdaj. Je tu na najrazličnejše načine, kot takemu pa mu ni treba pristajati na to, kar je. Lahko je drugačen, lahko je, kot na prvi pogled, le bežna misel, ki pa skromno izjavi dovolj je. Toda, kako se izreče dovolj je že stvar premisleka. Debate, ki pa zato, da ne pade v TV dogodek tipa Buckley Vidal, mora temeljiti na kritični refleksiji tako imenovanega monolitnega subjekta in na zavedanju, da obstajajo epistemološka nasilja, ki odločajo prav o življenju in smrti. Prisluhnimo sedaj znameniti debati Buckleya in Vidala, ki tvori tudi glavni leitmotiv dokumentarnega filma, o katerem smo razmišljali v današnji Temni zvezdi.
To our two guest commentators, William Buckley and Gore Vidal, and to ask them what observations they've made about the security that we have seen all week at this convention and the events tonight on the streets beyond this convention hall. Who is first? Mr. Vidal first.
I think there's very little that we can say after those pictures that would be in any way adequate. It's like living under a Soviet regime here. The guards, the soldiers, the agents provocateur on the parts of the police. You've seen the roughing up. The background of it is that that they came here for a rally on the 25th of August at convention Soldier Field, a coalition for an open convention. They were denied the use of the field. It was a friendly, a non-violent demonstration. As a rule, the press is on the side of the police, but this time the police have seriously injured some 21 newsmen, and the press has, of course, reacted. And on top of that, television is duly upset with Mayor Daley for other reasons. I'd just like to point out that picking up a newspaper at random on my way here, the Chicago Daily News has a columnist called Mike Royko, who says, Thomas E. Foran, the U.S. attorney, says Chicago police have shown, quote, wonderful discipline in their handling of the Lincoln Park demonstrators. Foran is either stupid or a liar, or maybe he's been wandering around in the wrong park. Chicago's police, for his information, have been beating innocent people with, to coin a phrase, reckless abandon. And he goes on to say that the biggest threat to law and order in the last week has been the Chicago Police Department. On an inside page here, we have one of the grisliest pictures I've seen in some time. It shows a group of police standing and laughing as they have thrown into the water a young man on a bicycle. And the note and the caption is, the witnesses said the police then just stood back and laughed. The youth reportedly had just been riding through the park. He had not even been part of the hippie gathering.
I wonder if we can let Mr. Buckley comment now for a short while.
The distinctions to be made, Mr. Smith, are these. Number one, do we have enough evidence to indict a large number of individual Chicago policemen? It would seem from what Mr. Burns showed us that we do. However, the effort here, not only on your program tonight, but during the past two or three days in Chicago, has been to institutionalize this complaint so as to march forward and say that, in effect, we have got a police state going here. We've got a sort of a fascist situation One young man approached me last night and said, are you aware that Mayor Daley is a fascist? To which my reply was no. And if that is the case, why didn't John Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy, whose favorite mayor he was, indict him as such and teach us that we should all despise him as a fascist? The point is that policemen violate their obligations just the way politicians do. If we could all work up an equal sweat, and if you all would be obliging enough to have your cameras handy, every time a politician commits demagogy or passes along a graft for bribes, or every time a businessman cheats on his taxes, or every time a labor union beats up people who refuse to join his unions, then maybe we could work up some kind of impartiality and resentment. As of this moment, I say, go after those cops who were guilty of unnecessary brutality. Develop your doctrine of security sufficiently so that when you don't have as many cops as you should have had, for instance, in Dallas in November of 1963, you don't go and criticize the FBI for not having been there, for not having taken sufficient security measures. But don't do what's happening here in Chicago tonight, which is to infer from individual and despicable acts of violence a case for implicit totalitarianism in the American system.
Mr. Vidal.
I should say that the issue was, of course, go after the bad cops. There are good cops as well as bad. But there is a more important issue here, a constitutional issue, and this is going to be repeated across the country. We have the right, according to our Constitution, of freedom of assembly. And if you want to hold a meeting for a peaceful purpose to demonstrate, you have that right. That right was abrogated by Mayor Daley, by his administration, by the Cook County Sheriff Joseph Woods. These people came here with no desire other that anybody's ever been able to prove than to hold peaceful demonstrations.
I can prove it.
How can you prove it?
Very easily, by citing the recorded words of Mr. Hayden of the SDS, of Mr. Rennie Davis of the Coordinating Committee, whose object has been to, quote, break down the false and deceptive institutions of bourgeois democracy sufficient to set in a revolutionary order. Anybody who believes that these characters are interested in the democratic process is deluding himself. I was 14 windows above that gang last night. These sweet little girls with their sun-decked dresses that we heard described a moment ago, and the chant between 11 o'clock and 5 o'clock in this morning from 4,000 or 5,000 voices was sheer utter obscenities directed at the President of the United States, at the mayor of this city, plus also the intermittent refrain, quotes, ho, 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 Ho Chi Minh, the NLF is sure to win. This is their way of accosting American society concerning their brothers, their sisters, their uncles, their fathers who are being shot at by an enemy to which, wrongly or rightly, nevertheless, we are fighting. I say it is remarkable that there was as much restraint shown as was shown, for instance, last night by cops who were out there for 17 hours without inflicting a single wound on a single person, even though that kind of disgusting stuff is being thrown at them and at all of American society.
Our reporter Jim Burns said there ought to be a different way to handle situations like that.
I wish he would invent it. Why don't you ask him next time, maybe tomorrow, to tell us how to handle it? Because I'm sure the Republican Party and the Democratic Party would form a joint platform which would suggest how to do it. Every time we develop an instrument like MACE, for instance, the purpose of which is actually to stop a situation when the law is on the side of stopping it without rendering permanent injury, that everybody goes hog mad at its use. What are we in fact supposed to use when they break law and order as handed down by judges? The right to assembly is not absolute. The Supreme Court has ruled several occasions.
Let Mr. Vidal have a chance.
The right of assembly is in the Constitution,
it's
in the
absolute,
Bill of Rights.
Right.
Nothing on earth is absolute.
Right.
We live in a relativist
right.
world.
Right.
However, it is the law, it is the Constitution, and let us have no more sly comments. Your capacity as the enemy of the people. By the way, you got an invitation this afternoon I haven't passed on to you from Norman Mailer, our mutual friend who was out there, as was I on Monday night. And he said, you tell Buckley to come out here. He might be very interested to see how his beloved police are behaving.
I was there.
That they are, you know, you said you were in the 15th floor. I don't believe you were there. And furthermore, when you start quoting Tom Hayden, and the other leaders of the new left who were involved in this, I suggest you get the quotes right. They are talking about revolution. They are not talking about bloody civil war, as you would indicate.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, until you get the exact quotes, you're well-known.
All you do is violate the law, you
your distortion.
And leave it to
it
somebody
is no
else
violation of the law to it, freely demonstrate,
now,
as you well know.
Now, wait a minute. The law is not something that you make up.
No, it's something in the Constitution that you cannot interpret. They came here for free assembly. They came here to demonstrate against the Vietnam War, which you happen to love. I'm sorry for that. They have not been allowed to hold a meeting in Soldier Field, which they should have had, could have had, would have had a peaceful demonstration. Instead, the police, fired by Mayor Daley and by a lot of jingos around here, have been roughing up everybody from the press to the delegates to the kids out there, and you are to sit here by and talk about the law and order.
Well, I'm going to talk to you about what the Supreme Court says, including Oliver Wendell Holmes, whom presumably you also despise, but the first relevant decision 110 years ago says that the demands of rights of assembly are not absolute in the sense that, for instance, there is no obligation on the part of the city of Chicago to allow all these people to come into this amphitheater and demonstrate. An extension of that piece of common sense shows the wisdom and the correctness of the federal court and the Supreme Court in the past to say that you cannot arrange a demonstration in such a way as to interfere with other people's freedoms. Mr. Burns admitted a moment ago that these people were interrupting the freedoms of people to cross the street, for instance.
Freedom of the people to cross
the
street.
They were given a license to demonstrate
at
a particular
moment. However, when they were in the parks on Monday night when I observed them, I watched the police come in like this from all directions, standing. They were sitting there singing folk songs. There were none of the obscenities which your ear alone seems to have picked up. They were absolutely well behaved, and suddenly the police began. You'd see one little stirring up in one corner, then you would suddenly see a bunch of them coming in with their nightclubs, and may I say, without their badges, which is illegal.
Mr. Vidal, wasn't it a provocative act to try to raise a Viet Cong flag in the park in the film we just saw? Wouldn't that invite raising a Nazi flag in World War II would have had similar consequences?
You must realize what some of the political issues are here. There are many. People in the United States happen to believe that the United States policy is wrong in Vietnam, and the Viet Cong are correct in wanting to organize their country in their own way politically. This happens to be pretty much the opinion of Western Europe and many other parts of the world. If it is a novelty in Chicago, that is too bad. But I assume that the point of the American democracy is you can express any point of view you want. Shut up a minute.
No, I won't. And some people were pro-Nazi, and the answer is that they were well-treated by people who ostracized them, and I'm for ostracizing people who egg on other people to shoot American Marines and American soldiers. I know you don't care.
As far as I'm concerned, the only sort of pro-crypto-Nazi I can think of is yourself. Failing that, I would only say that we can't have...
Now listen, you
queer.
Stop calling me a crypto-Nazi.
Let's stop calling names.
I'll slap you in your goddamn face, and you'll stay plastered.
Gentlemen, let's...
Bill.
Let the author, Myron Breckinridge, go back to his pornography and stop making any allusions of Nazism to somebody who was
to,
infantry in the last war.
You were not in the infantry, as a matter of fact.
You were not.
Now you're distorting your own military record.
Mr. Vidal, wasn't it a provocative act to pull down an American flag and put up a Viet Cong flag, even if you disagree with what the United States is doing?
It is not a provocative act. You have every right in this country to take any position you want to take because we are guaranteed freedom of speech. We've just listened to a
Certain acts
that are lawful are nevertheless provocative. I'll give you an example. George Lincoln Rockwell wanted to go to Manhattan in a stage a hate Jew rally, see? Now, Mayor Wagner said, no, you can't.
Yeah.
Now, some people, the American Civil Liberties Union, said, well, George Lincoln Rockwell has got a right to go there under the Constitution. All right, theoretically he has a right, but there is no question that it would have been provocative. I, for one, have to confess that I would have been discreetly on the side of people who threw tomatoes and maybe something even a little tougher at George Lincoln Rockwell. Now, here's an example of a right, but nevertheless, as you point out, a provocation. One doesn't go to Manhattan and come out in favor of Buchenwald. I think that the whole point of the American system is, and this is something that a lot of people don't understand, that the reason we succeed as a society is because we exclude certain things. We exclude genocide. We exclude class hatred. We ought to exclude it. And whether it's fighting a Maddox here or fighting people who come out in favor of Ho Chi Minh in Lincoln Park, the whole purpose of American society is that we are in favor of people who want to be free, not in favor of people who want to despise anybody else or commit America to genocidal policy.
Mr. Vidal, you...
What more to say on the subject? Well, I think we've seen...
Is there not
the passions of Mr. Buckley on this issue, the infantry warrior, which he never saw a shot fired in anger. I would point out that I come back, you keep asking me, Howard, about this provocative act. There are many acts which provoke, but if you're going to have freedom of assembly and freedom of speech, you must be able to say it. That is the whole point of this country. No. And once this is abrogated, then I think we might just as well stop these wars of freedom. What are we doing fighting in Vietnam if you cannot freely express yourself in the streets of Chicago?
I think we've run out of time, and I thank you very much for the discussion. There was a little more heat and a little less light than usual, but it was still very worth hearing.
Tako, tudi mi smo počasi prišli do konca, to sta bila Vidal in Buckley, njun način govora seveda, če tudi od povsem drugačnih tematikah, močno podoben temu, kar spremljamo danes. Z vami sem bila Nina Cvar, za tehnično realizacijo pa je poskrbel Jure.
Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja.